Milwaukee Sam Nation Talk Radio 790 KBC live from the Czech Republic, this time from Prague. I've been here over the weekend. Beautiful city, one of the great jewels of Europe, in my opinion. And I may be partial. This is the birthplace to both of my parents. But it is really one of those, it's one of those rare cities that still maintains its old charm. You know, it's you have these crooked streets. I don't know how to describe it. You know, it's nighttime right now here, very dark, middle of the night, and you have all these almost, they look gas lit, but they're not. But it's these dim lights in these beautiful crooked streets. And they have still these old giant cobblestone streets, you know, and so you're walking along and you almost have to be careful because these cobblestones are huge and they're not even necessarily, and you can trip. I mean, you can fall over them, but at the same time, you have such a sense of old world life. You can imagine carriages, horses. People milling about, and these streets, very few of them are straight. You know, they're not these neatly planned boulevards of the type that you see in Paris. I mean, Prague is really a medieval and Baroque city. So you have these little alleyways and dead ends and just beautiful buildings. I love it here. I'm glad to be back. Now, lots happening back home, and let's unpackage this bit by bit. First things first, the special prosecutor, Bob Mueller. Now, there are going to be some big issues here that begin to take a toll on this process moving forward. And the biggest bit of bad news, I would say, for those people that are keen to nail Donald Trump, the Boy Scout himself, the person who has been given, extended, I think, overextended, a incredible line of credit in the credibility department, none other than former FBI Director James Comey. Remember, he was always talked about as the Boy Scout. I mean, if he said anything about Trump, his word is as good as gold. And really, when it comes to the mainstream media, nothing that Comey has said has really been subjected to much scrutiny. And so, earlier today, a revelation in TheHill.com that a number of Comey's memos, at least four out of the nine memos that he prepared relating to his very uncomfortable meetings with President Donald Trump, at least four of them, if not more, contain classified information. Now, you'll remember that some weeks ago, Comey testified that none of the memos, to his best knowledge, contained any classified information. Now, you gotta step back from it a little bit and understand how this classification process works, because every bit of information, there's a process to determine what bits of information contained in certain files or on certain documents are or are not classified. And that classification review may not have occurred yet at the time that Comey had created these files, and certainly not at the time that he was testifying about them. So there it is entirely possible that they were determined to have been classified after he had testified to the Senate. But here's the real rub. A guy who is the head of the FBI, I'm just going to throw this out there, shouldn't he know what information is and is not classified? I mean, isn't this the guy that ad nauseum investigated one Hillary Rodham Clinton. I mean, he was knee-deep in that case, was he not? So if you have personally rolled up your shirt sleeves and waded into a very messy, complicated case that the crux of which was entirely based on nothing other than what information is marked classified and how to properly handle it. I mean, there's no other issue really with Hillary Clinton's email scandal, was there? I mean, that investigation entirely had to do with what was the classification on the document? Was that classification in fact correct? And then finally, was the handling of the document appropriate for the classification that document had? It's really, I'm making it more complicated than it is, but is it classified and wasn't handled properly? And he, of course, in that process, and we heard the press conference last summer, he and part of that process, Comey did, got up and said no and no. I mean, these documents were in fact classified, and some of them highly so. And no, so they weren't unclassified. And then no, these documents also happen to have been really horrifically mishandled. And I think the only point from that is you've got a guy who has a very specific knowledge of what these documents are, what makes the documents classified, what information is and is not classified. Remember him testifying to another point here that's really important. I mean, how many times did Comey in his testimony stop himself when he was addressing the senators? He says, I don't really feel comfortable going into that here in open session, but I would be more than happy to discuss this in closed session. And the reason he did that, or at least, you know, the idea behind it is that he, in his mind, in real time, is making a determination as to what information he's about to say is or is not classified. And if it is, he can't give it in open session, plain and simple. So if he's able to make that determination on the fly, why wasn't he not able to make that when he was writing these memos and then walking around with them in his pocket? Oh, and by the way, sharing it with a buddy of his, the Columbia law professor, who then he instructed to leak it to the New York Times. This is an enormous black eye for the credibility of the chief witness against Donald Trump in the obstruction case, right? If the entire obstruction case heavily leans on, I would say actually entirely leans on, James Comey, does it not? Comey alleges, the crux of the case is that Comey alleges that Trump, feeling a certain amount of heat from the investigation that Comey was leading into Trump-Russia, Russian collusion, preceding and following the election in November, that Trump then first leaned on Comey to drop the deal and to let it go. And then when that was unsuccessful, he unceremoniously fired the guy. I don't know, unless you're reading a different New York Times than I am, that is the crux of the case. And so, unless there is, as Trump alleges, a recording, a word-for-word, bona fide, verified record of what the two spoke of, it's a he said, she said scenario, isn't it? I had to. It's going to come down to what Trump says and what Comey says. And in this whole story, what have the media been telling us? Well, of course we believe Comey. Of course we believe him. He cannot possibly have this. Comey's credibility is without question. And then we've been inundated, right, since then with these puff pieces on how what a noble and valiant gentleman James Comey is. Well now, this latest bit of news is a dagger in the heart of the Comey credibility puff piece, which was, of course, at the cornerstone of the case for, you know, for proceeding with the with some kind of a case against Trump. Yeah, I mean, and the intent. Remember when Comey went after the intent? I didn't go after it. He with Hillary Clinton, Comey's deal was his pronouncement at his now famous summer press conference. He said, look, Hillary, yes, she had classified information on her server. Yes, it was horribly mishandled, and that it was on a server that was not on a government network, on a closed government network, as is required by protocol. And yes, it was being, these emails, these classified emails were being forwarded to now famous Democratic Party pervert Anthony Weiner and printed from his laptop, total violation of protocol. But we were told this was all okay because there was no intent. Remember that? You know, Hillary, you know, she made some mistakes, but there was no intent really to mishandle classified information. Well, what was Comey's intent here? Why did he make the memos? Isn't that the $1 million? Didn't he make the memo? I mean, look, even if you don't like Trump, why didn't he like the memos? Why did he write the memos? He wrote them specifically. I think there's no other logical explanation. It was a CYA. It was a cover your A money document, or series of documents in this case. The 9 memos were drafted deliberately to provide cover for Comey, knowing, let's take him at his word, knowing that things were going from bad to worse with the Trumpster, that Trump was doing all kinds of illegal machinations, and so these matters had to be documented. And at the time that this happened, of course, you know, people on the left don't question the fact that, look, you've got a guy who, in a privileged setting, an attorney who is has a duty of confidentiality with the president of the United States, who's in some not just his boss, but also a client, not maintaining these confidences. He's putting them in a writing. He's then sharing this writing with a friend who's sharing it with the newspaper. We got all sorts of problems there, beyond the entire classification issue. But he's writing these documents to cover himself. He's not writing these documents to protect the president. So his intent, this is important, his intent in maintaining these documents in his pocket, in his desk, on his personal laptop, in his home, at his personal office, wherever it is, assuming, of course, right, correctly, that it's not at FBI headquarters on his FBI computer. Otherwise, they would have stayed at the FBI at the time of his ouster, at the time of his dismissal from the FBI. He had them on him. And so it doesn't matter if they were in his pocket, on his person, on his cell phone, in his laptop, in his desk, at home. They weren't where they should have been if they were classified. You cannot remove classified material from a government facility without permission. And that's the issue. So it's to me this entire thing here, this revelation that Comey had, that these Comey memos were classified. It doesn't matter if 1, 2, 3, 4, 6 of them, reports from the Hill are that at least four of them were classified. This opens Comey up to criminal charges. And I got to ask you how this plays out. What do you think? You've got Comey that comes out swinging against the president. You've got Comey who is the star witness for the Bob Mueller special prosecutor investigation into Trump-Russia collusion, into obstruction of justice charges, theoretically, against the president. You don't think that the Trump Justice Department will go after Comey on this one? See, I think that this here right now today, this is a bombshell. And I'm surveying various newspapers, and I'm looking at what the, I mean, the Washington Post doesn't even have this on the front page because there is no excuse for it. There's no way to explain it away. So the mainstream media is going to treat this with you know, a usual sense of just, I don't know, willful ignorance. But it fundamentally comes down to the fact of if you want to use the Comey standard as used with the Hillary email scandal, that it's based on intent, then you have to look at what was his intent here. And Comey's intent here was purely selfish. There's no legitimate reason for him to have removed classified information from his desk at work. Unacceptable. All right, stay tuned. There's more to this story, and it's fast developing, and I want to make sure that you have all the details. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, back after this.
Talk radio. Talk radio. 790 KABC.
Sam Rogowski back talking about the James Comey revelations. That in fact, some of the memos that he had written detailing his meetings with President-elect and then later President Trump may have contained some classified information. This is a bad deal for James Comey and a bad dealer for Bob Mueller, who was hoping, I think, to lean on Comey as a star witness in potentially an obstruction case against Trump. Now, all right. What does this all mean? There's a very important issue here that I need to take a minute to explain. Because if you recall, during the meetings, the testimony in the Senate, there was a Comey was being questioned by a Republican senator, Roy Blunt of Montana. And Blunt asked on June 8th of Comey, quote, "You considered it to be somehow your own personal document that you could share to the media as you wanted through a friend," talking about that memo that Comey had shared with his buddy, right, and gotten released. Now, Comey's answer, listen to very careful here. Comey answers, correct. I understood this to be my recollection recorded of my conversation with the president as a private citizen, which he is now, or was at the time, again, in June 8th. I thought it was important to get it out. Now, the left and their cohorts in the mainstream media have seized on this and saying, look, this is just Comey's being a whistleblower. I mean, Comey's just taking his own personal experience, his own personal memories, and he's putting those on paper. That's nothing bad. I have my own personal thoughts in my head, and I'm just putting them down on a piece of paper. Those are my thoughts. And this is such a fundamental misunderstanding of how classified information works. I don't care if you've been in the military, hell, any level of government where you have some type of security clearance. If you're listening to me right now, you're shaking your head and you're calling BS on this statement, on his sworn testimony. And why is that? Because if you go to work as part of your job in X department of the government, and in that department X, you are given secrets Y and Z. It's not just that you have a document or a disk or a photograph that is classified. You can't talk about it. Part of the classification is the contents, the knowledge of whatever it is that you're reviewing. This is a common problem. For example, you've got people in the military can't write about missions that they have been on. Yeah, what if they just said, hey, this is man, I almost lost my life out there. This is my personal memory. I'm entitled to have this. I'm entitled to talk about it. I'm entitled to write it down on a piece of paper and share it with the media. No, you're not, okay? You're not, because it's not yours to share. There is a classification review that determines what is classified and what becomes later unclassified. And it's only through that process that classified information can eventually be shared with the public. And if it is, what's the story? You can go to jail. And so if people, right now people are asking, you know, what's Bob Mueller going to do about it, right? He's a special prosecutor. He was intending to use Comey as his witness, I'm sure. Bob Mueller may do nothing about it. This is not necessarily in the scope of Bob Mueller's investigation. Bob Mueller's investigating Trump-Russia, collusion and obstruction of justice. The Attorney General, Jeff Sessions, he may do something about it. And as I said last segment, I can't imagine that he wouldn't. In fact, he ought to. They ought to throw the book at Comey. Because the lesser people, you know, mere foot soldiers in the machine of the government have been prosecuted and jailed for far less. Mark my words. All right, we got the news up next. And when we get back, let's talk about this G20 summit and Ivanka sitting in Trump's chair. I've got some strong thoughts about this. You may be surprised. Sam Rogowski, back after this.
Talk radio. 790 KABC.
Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KABC, and we are not live from the Sweet James Studios. Rather, we are deep behind the orange curtain. We're deep behind the formerly known as Iron Curtain, broadcasting live from the Czech Republic, and we'll be here through the end of this week and back in Orange County on Monday. Prague, I don't know, if you've gotten ever a chance to go through Europe and you've got some choices of places to visit, and if Prague is one of the places you can see, don't hesitate. I think every person I've ever talked to thinks, oh, it's weird, it's going to be in Eastern Europe, I don't know, it might be an odd place. It's not. It is one of the true jewels of Europe. And the reason for it is that Prague was a wealthy capital city for many centuries, okay? And it developed in a very beautiful way, castles and beautiful churches, palatial estates, residences, palaces, and then for a period of time during the Austro-Hungarian Empire before World War I, it stopped being a capital because the capital moved to Vienna under the Habsburgs. And why is that important for the architecture? Well, no, it's interesting because capital cities in Europe, they constantly would be modernized. They would be improved and made bigger and better. And part of bigger and better meant, well, they would come in and, you know, a new ruler, a new king would come in and say, we got to make our city grander. We got to make it more exquisite. And that meant tearing down old homes and those crooked streets that I talked about earlier in the hour, tearing those down and putting in grand boulevards, putting in these beautiful roads, you know, avenues, if you will, fountains, statues, monuments. And what you end up with, if you go to Vienna, not to take away from Vienna, I think Vienna is a beautiful city, but you have a lot of grand boulevards, grand avenues, beautiful monuments to people who won't matter to you at all. And really, it's for the most part, by European standards, a largely modern city, because the old neighborhoods, the ones that have had real character, have, you know, were torn down 200 years ago to make way for a much grander, larger, more beautiful capital. Prague was spared. And so in that sense, it was, you know, for a while a backup capital, but it never underwent that type of beautification. And so what you have is a capital city with a remarkable level of preservation of medieval architecture, Baroque, Rococo architecture. And then in at the turn of the century, had a huge Art Nouveau movement. That's a separate thing. Just beautiful, beautiful buildings from the turn of the century as well, but all intermingled. So you can have a medieval building, an Art Nouveau building, a Baroque building, all in one row. It's worth seeing. Okay, it really is. It's better than Santa Monica. You gotta trust me on this. Better even than Orange County. Okay. What do you think of this Ivanka Trump, you know, situation with her sitting in her dad's chair? What do you think? You heard that the Clintons have chimed in. You know, Chelsea Clinton's tweeting. You know, my dad would never have put me in that position and sat in the chair. When I come back, let me take you through what happened, what actually went down, because I think there's been a lot of hype here. And then I'm going to give you my opinion on it, because as per usual, I think that the noise out there in the media is far, far, far greater than what this situation calls for. I'm humored by it. But I do have an opinion, as always. All right, don't go anywhere. Sam Rogowski, back after this.
Talk radio. 790 KABC.
Sam Rogowski here. So if you or a loved one get hurt, and get hurt because someone somewhere did something stupid, or maybe even intentionally, like rear-end you, or maybe their dog bit you somewhere unfortunate. Or maybe it was a product. Maybe you've got one of those, I don't know, one of those vape things and it blew up in your pocket. Whatever the case is, whatever you do, do not go at it alone. Don't try to call the place that sold you the vape thing, or don't call the owner of the dog and try to sort it out. That never works out. Have someone have all those difficult conversations for you on your behalf. Make the person that you trust to handle that for you. Sweet James Bergner, the only attorney that we trust here on the program. Sweet James is the man. He is the guy that can call, can get things done, can be there for you when you're up against a difficult situation. Don't be a victim twice, right? You don't want to go and call the insurance company and then have them take advantage of you. Don't do it. Instead, call Sweet James Bergner, 800-881-2021, 1-800-881-2021, or visit his website. Get all the info there. Figure out if he can help you. But don't hesitate. Give him a call. Look at his website, sweetjames.com. Give him a call. He can help. All right, Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation here, talking into our mobile Sam Nation microphone, live from Prague, in the Czech Republic. And, well, I was following the G20 summit very closely, because it was not too far away from where I was. I was in the western part of the Czech Republic, so really only a few hundred kilometers away from where all this was taking place. And one of the kind of unexpected situations that got a lot of hype in the last few days over the weekend was the fact that Ivanka Trump sat in for about 10 minutes for the president at a roundtable meeting that had something to do, as I understand it, with women's entrepreneurship in Africa. Now, I don't know what our friends on the left want. Did they want I guess they wanted the guy that hates women to sit on the Women's Entrepreneurship Committee. They wanted him back in the seat. In their mind, you know, I mean, but, right? I mean, it's getting to be that absurd. It is completely normal for presidents and prime ministers and other world leaders to have their aides sit in for them at these conferences when they go and they leave the table for whatever reason. Now, what is unusual here is the fact that Ivanka Trump is the president's daughter. And that's making people uncomfortable. And it reminds me of junior high. When I was in junior high, President Clinton, this is 1992, 93, he's brand new in the White House, and he has turned over healthcare to Hillary. And Hillary's running with it. She's running with healthcare. And I was really offended by it. I remember I was telling a teacher of mine, and this is me in the seventh grade, and I'm like having it out with my teacher. I'm saying, hey, you know, what the hell? How is Hillary doing healthcare? We didn't elect her to anything. What's the wife of the president doing any of this? And my teacher, who I was a big liberal at the time, probably still is, looked at me and said, you know, Sam, every presidency has unelected aides, unelected policy people, unelected senior officials that handle policy, that make big decisions, that do, you know, very consequential things that affect you and me. And it's normal. So deal with it. And I didn't have a comeback in the seventh grade. And I still don't have a comeback today. All it is 10 minutes at the table. You guys were fine with it when Hillary was running doing healthcare in 93. So you're going to just have to take a large chill pill and leave this one alone. And that's the word. Back after this.
Talk radio. 790 KABC.
Sam Rejofsky. Okay, here is a kind of a full circle view back to what I was saying earlier about James Comey, these leaked memos of his that now are found to contain classified information. Comey is, by all accounts, a sophisticated lawyer. So he understands, not only as a lawyer, not only as the director of the FBI, but also as a seasoned political operative, he understands how classified information works, how it ought to be handled, and what not to do. What Comey did was he made a political calculation to use this classified information in a way that would benefit him. He used it to provide perhaps himself some job security, and then to attack Trump, with whom he had a beef, for firing him. Plain and simple. I talk a lot here. You listen to it. I talk about the Trump derangement syndrome and how people who normally are very reasoned and clear-headed do really stupid stuff, because they just are so out of their minds mad about Trump. This is another example of it. This may end up putting James Comey from head of the FBI to federal inmate. The irony of this is Comey wants to nail Trump, right? That's what he wanted to do. And in the end, he may be the one who gets himself certainly prosecuted, maybe not convicted, but prosecuted. I saw a tweet earlier, I think it was the end of last week, from Preet Bharara, who is the U.S. attorney for New York. Trump fired him. And then he got hired on by Bob Mueller. Huge conflict of interest, right? So Mueller's hiring on, as part of his team, a bunch of anti-Trumpers, big Democrats, you know, people that really have it in for Trump. And Barrera had, you know, this response to Donald Trump Jr., who was talking about the Russian meddling thing. And then he had this little quip where he said, well, pursuing a corrupt politician, mobster, murderer on strong FBI evidence, if he vehemently denies it, we would just drop it usually. Kind of a tongue-in-cheek thing to say. And I'm looking at this, I'm going, this guy is supposed to be an independent prosecutor, is an employee of an independent special counsel, and he's tweeting anti-Trump rhetoric? This is insane. These people are losing their minds because in their echo chamber, they are so right and Trump is so wrong that they are taking their usual good judgment and throwing it right out of the window. All right, we're going to be back tomorrow, do the same thing all over again. Please, please tune in. We're going to have fun. I promise you that. All right, have a good night. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio, 790 KBC. People.